Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Brian Sussman. And, of course, many years ago, Brian was the weatherman here in the Monterey Bay area on KSBW. And although you never meet these people who are on television, you get to the point where you almost feel like you know them. And among our family, were very, very upset when Brian picked up and moved off to another larger station where he was the weatherman there. I know he went out to Baymont Christian School and talked to my son, he's in his 40s now, but certainly he was in high school at the time. And we still have the pamphlet that he passed out there. But Brian certainly has done a great deal of work, and of course he's coming from a Christian perspective. He's actually talks and he's done a lot of research on global warming. And Brian, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Monteith, it's an absolute pleasure. I feel as if I know you because I do spend a lot of time in the Santa Cruz area, and we have so many friends in common, so this is just a delight. And it's a real honor to speak with your listenership.
Well, thank you so very much. And we were just tickled when we found we could get you onto our program. And so, but basically, you've been doing a lot of research on this whole global warming scam. So I'm going to let you just do the talking, and I'll be quiet here, because why should we be concerned about this? Shouldn't we be concerned about global warming and the fact that the oceans are rising? And pretty soon, why, of course, we're going to just destroy vegetation, destroy the planet?
You know, Dr. Monteith, because I do keep up on you, and I have for many years, by the way, I really have. Again, we have so many friends in common, I could start dropping names, but the bottom line is I know that you're a respecter of the scientific method. And I always tell people this when it comes to my faith. My faith can withstand the scientific method. I don't believe in thin air. I believe in evidence. And it's the same thing when we look at, for example, global warming. I want to see the evidence. I want to see if this theory that mankind's burning of fossil fuels is warming the planet, I want to see if that holds up. And it's just amazing. I was in Santa Cruz earlier today, I will tell you, and I was outside the Whole Foods, and there were the hippies with clipboards trying to get me to sign a petition, and I saw what their shirt read, and they were Greenpeacers, and they were out to stop global warming. And I thought, this will be absolutely too easy. And my first question was, okay, if we're experiencing global warming, how much has the temperature of the Earth warmed? And, of course, you know, their guess was several degrees. It's warmed several degrees since the Industrial Revolution. I said, whoa, hold, stop. Temperature hasn't warmed several degrees. Let's get that straight. Because the temperature of the Earth, since 1850, start of the Industrial Revolution, when it was in its infancy, and the end of the Little Ice Age, temperature's only risen 0.7 degrees Celsius. That's a little more than 1 degree Fahrenheit. Now, right then and there, they don't want to deal with the facts. They say, well, where did you get those numbers from? And I was going to say, well, I wrote this book, but I thought, I'll just move on. But Dr. Monteith, the point is, the temperature has only risen 0.7 degrees Celsius since 1850, and most of that warming was before 1940. Since 1998, there has been absolutely no warming. So if you're going to have global warming, it seems to me like you should have global warming. We're just not seeing any of the warming. The other part of all of this is CO2. Back when I was a kid learning about photosynthesis and various atmospheric cycles, I remember hearing that CO2 was a nutrient necessary for life. Now it's been vilified as some type of poison.
A toxic and noxious gas. We'll be right back here in just a moment with Brian. And, of course, it's been said, it doesn't matter how ridiculous something it is if you say it often enough and convincingly enough, people will believe. And I wonder how many people in America realize this is an essential element for life of human beings and for flowers and trees and vegetables and fruits. I mean, how this is suddenly a noxious gas and has been declared so by the Environmental Protection Agency. Go right ahead, Brian.
Yes, it's just amazing. And now we have the EPA, as you mentioned, deciding that CO2 is a pollutant. It defies logic, but people are believing this. They just believe it so. Okay, so let's talk about how much CO2 has increased since this beginning of the Industrial Revolution. Well, it's increased about 33%, best we can tell. But, okay, now, Doctor, let's talk about how small a sliver of the Earth's atmospheric gases are these carbon dioxide particulates. It's 38/1,000ths of a percent. That's how much CO2 is in our atmosphere. 38/1,000ths of a percent. That's it. Now, how much of that's contributed by mankind? Well, according to your own government, only 3%. 3% of 38/1,000ths. I can't imagine a number that small, Dr. Monteith. And again, how much has it increased since the Industrial Revolution? 33%. Okay, well, some might say that's 33% more than it was in 1850. But here's another thing to consider. If we look over the Earth's history, we can tell via various proxy data that the amount of CO2 in the atmosphere has at times been 6 to 12 times what it is today. So, again, it's a bunch of fal de ra. They're not using data correctly, and the scientific method has fallen apart on its own merit. Therefore, it needs to be tossed aside, and we need to move on. But they can't do that. Now, why can't they do that, Dr. Monteith? Well, I know you know the answer to this, but I'm grateful that you're allowing me the opportunity. It's because we have elites who are using this as an opportunity to put forward the biggest change that we have ever seen in the United States of America, the biggest political and economic transformation. This is their hook. This is their handle. This is something they've been dreaming of. They're not going to let go of this crisis because they want to move us closer to a one-world government, as has been envisioned by so many, including many at the United Nations, since its inception. That's one part of it. The other part is others aren't really concerned about the political. They just see this as an unbelievable opportunity to make loads of money, especially off of the Green Revolution and cap and trade.
And of course, President Obama, talking about what was going on in the Gulf, said this is going to change our lives, and it is going to. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and certainly if we look and see what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico, why, of course, this is being used as a vehicle to stop offshore oil drilling. And, of course, President Obama is using this as an excuse to push his agenda for green energy. That's, of course, wind power and, of course, solar power. And he says this is going to be, some people say it's just too expensive. We can't afford it at this time. But I say, and this President Obama speaking, of course, I say we can't afford not to move on to alternative sources of energy. Now, we're going to stop offshore oil drilling. That's what this is all about. But other countries aren't going to stop their offshore oil drilling. China's not going to stop offshore oil drilling. Brazil and Russia and England and Sydney, all the other countries aren't going to stop offshore oil drilling. This is just aimed at America. But you go right ahead, Brian.
Well, it is aimed at America, Dr. Monteith. And this is what I talk about in the book Climategate. A lot of folks say, well, it's just another book, denouncing the theory of man-made global warming. No, it's much more than that. This is a comprehensive book. I tell you why the environmental movement wants to, for example, stop drilling in the Gulf, and why the environmental movement wants to push cap and trade down our throat. And then I also tell you what will happen to our society and us as individuals should they become successful. So that's what sets the book Climategate apart from perhaps other books. I look into the social and political implications of the environmental movement vis-a-vis global warming. So, okay, let's talk about the Gulf. You're right. This is a crisis that they're going to take advantage of. Now, how do we know this? Well, let's just look at history. History is a wonderful thing, Dr. Monteith, and you know that. Karl Marx, of course, said history is worth nothing, but to the patriot, history means an awful lot, and we can learn from it. Let's go back to 1969. 1969, we had an oil spill off of the Gulf of, off of the coast of Santa Barbara. That oil spill was the impetus for Earth Day. That's why Earth Day was founded, because the 1969 oil spill, and that 1969 event shut down oil and gas exploration along the western coast of the United States forever. We've not done any further drilling, and there's so much oil. Not in deep water, 300, 400, 500 feet of water. We can't get there because the environmentalists have shut it off. Look at the Exxon Valdez, 1989. You had what perhaps was a drunk ship captain running aground, loses about 250,000 barrels of oil up there. That shut off Bristol Bay up until 2007 when President Bush tried to reopen it, but President Bush conveniently closed it back down just last year. So again, these environmentalists are long-suffering. They have a crisis. They stick with it. They try to put areas with loads of oil off limits. That's what's going to happen in this Gulf. They're taking advantage of a crisis. And as you just mentioned, Doctor, there will be other countries dipping their sticks into the well for many, many years to come. But in our territory, we'll close it off. We are the only country on the face of the world that puts its own natural resources off limits. Now, you talk about putting us in a place of jeopardy. That's exactly what they're doing, and this is a part of the plan, I believe.
I think you're absolutely right, but why don't you tell us how this is going to impact on the average individual? Because, you know, most people are concerned about the environment. Most people love the forest. They love the animals. They love the flowers, and that they, you know, most of us are at heart environmentalists. But the question is, what do you mean by environmentalist? And certainly what the radical environmentalists want to do is use the supposed threat to the environment to change our way of life. How is this going to impact the life of the people listening to this program?
Well, okay, let's break down this cap and trade bill. This is the Senate energy bill that they're trying to pass. Now, the House already passed their version of this. This is actually a series of successive bills. It began in 2005. President Bush signed a draconian energy bill with a lot of mysterious language that I break down in the book Climategate. Same thing happened in 2007, taking what was put in place in 2005, extending it further. And now we have the 2009 energy bill, and this goes warp speed. Here's what we as Americans stand to lose if this bill ends up passing. If the House passes it, President Barack Obama will sign it. We will lose liberty in the form of our privacy. We will lose jobs like nobody's business, and I'll prove that to you in just a moment. And the cost of everything in the United States of America will go up. We will lose savings and wealth in this country. Now, Doctor, let's talk about the savings and wealth for starters. If you tax energy, virtually everything we consume involves energy at some particular level. The cost of living will go up because energy is going to be taxed. It'll be taxed in another way, a number of ways, through direct fees and also through this cap and trade scheme. And for your listeners who don't understand how the cap and trade scheme works, it can be broken down very simply. Every business and every industry in America will have a cap regarding the amount of greenhouse gases they'll be able to emit. The Environmental Protection Agency is going to randomly just look at businesses and industry and say, okay, you're allowed this many tons of carbon dioxide, period. If you surpass that amount, you will have to go onto an exchange and purchase carbon credits. Hundreds of pages of the Senate Energy Bill and the House Bill are devoted to setting up this carbon exchange. It's the Chicago Climate Exchange. That'll be the name of this exchange. It's like the Chicago Mercantile Exchange or the New York Stock Exchange. And every time a carbon credit is traded, somebody's going to be getting a skim. They'll get a little commission. Beyond that, these carbon credits will be able to be saved, hoarded, traded. Even derivatives trading will be allowed. So there'll be a great supply and demand issue. So if you're a company, for example, in California producing widgets, and you have a lot of greenhouse gases that you're emitting in the production of those widgets, if you surpass your cap, you will have to go to the exchange and buy credits. And again, those credits could be very, very expensive. You're going to have to include that in your cost of doing business. You'll pass that along to the consumer. and we're going to take a hit whenever we buy one of your widgets.
But I don't understand, Brian. Basically, if I can buy the credits and continue emitting emissions, it doesn't seem to me this is going to actually decrease the pollution at all. I mean, I'm going to be able to pollute just as much as I did before.
Yeah.
Now I'm just going to have to pay some money. In other words, what we're doing is I'm going to have to give money to people in other countries. It looks to me more like a transfer of the wealth of the American people to other countries rather than decreasing emissions. Isn't that right?
Yes. I mean, it's so silly. Emissions will not be decreased at all because you'll be able to pay to put more emissions into the air. But, okay, let's talk about those businesses who say, we're watching the bottom line. We just can't afford to do business in the United States anymore because these emissions are killing us. Let's move our operations to Indonesia. Let's move our operations to Brazil. Let's take it to India. Let's go wherever where we don't have to put up with these shenanigans. That's exactly what's going to happen, and Dr. Monteith, that's a part of the goal. That is another form of wealth redistribution where our companies, our blood, our sweat, our tears, our research and development, our risk, is all taken overseas to give them a little opportunity to boost their economy. Now, okay, let's talk about the jobs that will be lost, because this is both of these things are addressed in this Senate Energy Bill and the House Energy Bill. I'll give you an example. Regarding jobs, if this is in the House Energy Bill, it's very clear. In the Senate Energy Bill, it's a little murky and it's tied into the IRS code, but it's very direct in the House Energy Bill, and I do talk about it to a T in the book Climategate. If your job is moved offshore, you will get 3 years of unemployment at 70% of your last paycheck, plus job retraining, plus job relocation, paid for by Uncle Sam. Now, there's a group called the Peterson Institute. I was in Washington, D.C. a couple weeks ago. There's a group called the Peterson Institute. They're a left-leaning organization. They think this cap-and-trade bill is wonderful. And they've broken it down. They've done studies. And they admit, they say, well, you know what? There are going to be 203,000 green jobs created every year if this bill passes. But they admit, it's in the fine print, there will be a net loss of jobs every year. So in other words, 203,000 new jobs, but even more jobs lost.
Now, do we have any idea how many? Because I've heard that we're going to lose about two jobs for every green job. We're going to lose twice as many jobs as we're going to produce. Is that an absurd approximation or not?
Not at all. Not at all. And again, they'll pay people off with you'll get a three-year vacation because that's the way they're going to do business. Here's your 3 years of unemployment. Take it and shut up. Now, how do we know what you're saying is correct? Well, let's just do a little thinking here. The goal of this bill in terms of greenhouse gas emissions is to reduce them by 83% come the year 2050. Now, if you look at census data is very conservative. They're saying by 2050 we'll have 100 million more people in the United States of America. 100 million more people in the United States of America. That's about a 33% increase from where we are today. And you want to decrease greenhouse gases 83%? The only way you'll be able to do that is for our entire manufacturing sector to be shipped offshore. The only way you will accomplish that is by livestock, because they do produce greenhouse gases. Livestock and dairy, they're going to have to go offshore. If you want meat, if you want dairy, it's going to come from another country.
But what about automobiles? Certainly the automobile emits its greenhouse emissions.
Absolutely.
As well.
There will be no room for an automobile. And there will be no room also for the coal industry. Coal powers over 50% of America's households. We're talking massive job losses in this country. And they talk about the green jobs. Well, these are basically low-level construction jobs, installing solar panels, installing insulation. And then also, as I talk about in my book, I call it the Green Goon Squad, Doctor. You'll have thousands and thousands of federal agents walking the land to institute the new green building codes, which we can talk about as well.
Well, of course, this is going to be extremely expensive, but what about communist China? What about India, which is the largest polluters in the world? They're the real cause of the pollution today. Are they going to go along with this? Are they going to destroy their economy, phony science? Because, of course, they know that CO2 is not a toxic emission. They know that the world is actually cooling. It has been for the last decade. Are they going to destroy their economy to go along with this? Or is it simply America is going to destroy our economy?
Yes.
We'll be back in just a moment here. Brian, you go ahead. What about China? What about India? What about the rest of the world?
Well, Doctor, this is very troubling because those countries get a free pass. And this has been the plan all along. All of the United Nations policies, treaties, background articles and such have always had the United States in their crosshairs. And it's no different now. These countries will get a free pass for various reasons. Well, they're developing countries. Well, guess what? We are the great country in terms of research and development and ideas, et cetera. And we've been a country that's done a wonderful job of cleaning up its messes. You can look, for example, between 1980 and 2005, and I talk about this in my book, ClimateGate. You look at the six pollutants defined by the Clean Air Act. Now, I was never a fan of the Clean Air Act. I'm not a fan of most things the federal government does. They're overstepping their constitutional boundaries. But the Clean Air Act was instituted in 1970. It was something that was put together by a guy that I'm very critical of in the book, Richard Nixon, and his brand new EPA that he put together with a stroke of the pen. The EPA was created as a rogue agency, in my opinion. It was created with a stroke of a pen, an executive order. Clean Air Act was unnecessary, but nonetheless, if you look at the pollutants in the Clean Air Act, between 1980 and 2005, fine particulate matter declined 40%. Ozone levels fell 79%. Nitrogen dioxide levels decreased almost 40%. Sulfur dioxide over 60%. Lead levels down 96%. And during this time, automobiles driven each year, miles nearly doubled. Tons of coal burned for electricity production increased by 60%. So, again, between 1980 and 2005, we saw more cars, we were using more energy, and yet all of the pollutants signified by the Clean Air Act went down. We've done a marvelous job of cleaning our skies here in the United States of America. Those other countries could give a rip. You go to China virtually any day this summer, I've got news for you. If you're in Beijing, you better bring a gas mask. That town is polluted, the likes of which we haven't seen in this country since the 1930s in places like Pittsburgh or maybe even the L.A. Basin and other industrial cities. So we've done a wonderful job of cleaning up our skies. These other countries will get a free pass. Why? Because the goal is to de-develop the United States of America. Now, those aren't my words. Those are the words of Barack Obama's hand-picked science and technology advisor, John Holdren. De-develop the United States of America. Use environmental policy and political means to de-develop the United States of America. That's the goal here, Dr. Monteith.
Well, you know, Brian, when you tell people that, why they look at you and they say, that couldn't be true, but I know you're right. I mean, I've read the plan. I've read the writings of these people, of Marie Strong and the others. They know exactly what they're doing. They want to destroy our society, to deindustrialize the United States. And yet, of course, you tell that to the average individual, their eyes glass over, and they say, it just couldn't be true. I won't believe it.
Well, it's a shame that people want to be so stupid because this is the plan and this is the goal, and I think I make a very, very strong case for this in the book ClimateGate. And people, you know, right away, Doctor, when they read the book, the first thing they say is, well, you were just a TV meteorologist. Well, you know, Doctor, this is a book that should have been done by an investigative journalist from, you know, from a mainstream newspaper.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess it's Brian Sussman, who is basically, Brian, before we go on, would you tell us where you're doing your meteorology? I know that you're on television. I heard you even have your own program now. What's going on?
I do. I left television completely a few years ago and got into radio because, Dr. Monteith, you know, radio is the last bastion for free speech. I mean, we actually can say what we believe when we're on the radio. So it's been a great joy, but the greatest joy has been putting this book together, ClimateGate, I always aspired to write a book that I, you know, it was one of those things, Doctor, I thought, maybe for such a time as this, maybe I could be a guy that actually could be used to stop this cap and trade bill from passing. That was my goal. I just was so frightened by the idea that they would now be controlling the amount of energy we use that I wanted to write this book. And I'm so grateful that so many people have read the book and are reading the book. And maybe we have a chance to defeat this bill, because this is going to take us in a direction that would be envisioned by Marx and Lenin, not Madison or Lincoln.
Well, I'll tell you what, we do have actually four different networks, and I want to get you on all of them, because certainly we need to get the information out and get people to read your book. Now, where is your radio program?
I work out of San Francisco, KSFO.
Oh, that's a great station.
Yeah, and, you know, it's one of those wonderful things, Doctor, where when you're working without a script and no one's telling you what to say, it's a beautiful thing. Now, I know I could probably cross a line and get fired for something, but to date, I've had a wonderful management team that's backed me in a court of law, and I really appreciate that, and I know that God is always watching my backside to protect me. But the bottom line is, Doctor, with this health care bill, and you're a physician, you know more about that bill than most of us. When they can control your health, boy, your health care, man, can they control your health. And it's the same thing with this energy bill. If they can control the amount of energy we consume, they'll control us to a greater degree. And the sad thing in all of this, there is, if oil and gas is so demonic, and I don't believe it is. I believe it's a wonderful resource. But if it is so demonic, why aren't they providing for us any alternatives? You know, I talk about this in the book. Solar power is kind of nifty when it's on your own roof, and I think solar is especially great if you can get off the grid and use it. But the bottom line is, there's no plan for solar in this country on a mass scale. The federal government has denied 130 permits, applications, I should say, for permits to erect solar arrays in various deserts in the United States of America.
I know they wanted to put one in the Mojave Desert. They wouldn't let them do it.
No, they wouldn't let them do it. Now, okay, you know why. I know why. That's because that's part of the UN biosphere created by Dianne Feinstein. And they don't want to ruin that delicate environment.
But how are we going to get solar if we can't actually put this up in the place where you could really generate solar electricity?
Yeah, because you're right, exactly. That's why there is no plan being put forward by this government. Okay, let's talk about wind. You and I know this, but many of your listeners don't. The largest wind farm in the world is in the San Francisco Bay Area. It's in the East Bay Hills. It's called the Altamont Pass. Largest wind farm in the world. It's been there since the 70s. Ever since that wind farm went online, there have been lawsuits filed to stop it. Lawsuits filed by whom? Environmentalists. They hate the wind farm. So solar, wind, not realistic. Okay, let's talk about nuclear power. Barack Obama gave that big speech March 30th. He threw a little bone at the nuclear industry, saying he's got some low-interest loans that he'll provide for them. Well, I will tell you, if you read the speech, he also said we would move forward on our nuclear policy based on safety and taking safety and environmental concerns into mind. Well, it's those safety and environmental concerns that have kept us from commissioning any new nuclear power plants since the 1970s. And in my book, I have quotes from Barack Obama. He has never been a fan of nuclear power. He's made fun of the nuclear power industry, and his energy secretary, Stephen Chu, is no great fan either. So, you know, there's no plan for nuclear, no plan for wind, no plan for solar. What is the plan? The plan is called efficiency. The plan is for us to use less. The plan, ladies and gentlemen, is called the smart grid. That's what they have planned for us.
And what is the smart grid?
The smart grid was instituted in the 2005 energy bill. It was called demand response technology. I read those words in 2005 and began doing research, and I was shocked. I was shocked to find out that this grid is going to be big brother in our homes, Dr. Monteith.
Well, I have no question. They really want to expand the power of the federal government under any guise they possibly can. And this is what people don't understand. The enemy is not hiding in a cage over there in Pakistan, or certainly in Beijing or in Moscow, wanting to take away our freedom. The enemy is in New York City. The enemy is in Washington, D.C. They have a different vision of America, and they're going to destroy what we've known in the past. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is Brian Sussman. And Brian, my wife, is one of your great fans. And she asked me to ask you what time you're on KSFO.
5 to 9 a.m., doctor.
You do 4 hours every day?
It's quite a grind, but it is stimulating, and I thoroughly enjoy the opportunity.
Oh, well, really, I do a great deal of radio as well, and I will have to admit that you get a tremendous adrenaline rush. It's always a challenge, especially when your guest doesn't show up, and you have to go on with nothing to say and just to hope that people are going to call in. But you laugh because I know you've been there, and it really is what a unique opportunity to get ideas out, and certainly it's so important. We all work together towards this common goal of reaching the American people and letting them really understand what's going on. And of course, behind so much of what's going on, I believe there are powerful spiritual forces which are really intent upon destroying what was once a great Christian nation, no longer, but at one time we really were. Well, let's go on with what you were talking about, and as far as the things that are going on. So KSFO, what does the number on the dial?
560 a.m., and it streams live at KSFO.com.
All right, fine. Well, I hope that we get some of the people listening there, that we go off the air at 5, and so they can listen from 5 to 8 to your program, and then they can come to listen to us at 9 o'clock.
But, I love it, doctor.
Because, you know, we're not competing. This is the important thing. There are lots of people that are friends are doing this sort of thing. I had no idea that you were doing that much radio, and I'm just so pleased that you're out there, and that there's a voice of reason up in the San Francisco Bay Area, where, I mean, there's so many good people up there, but if you never hear the truth, why, you have no idea what's going on.
Yes, it's true. Now, I was laughing earlier because when you said a guest missing and you wouldn't know what to say, I'm thinking, wait a second, what I know of Stan Monteith is that he's never at a lack of something to say, okay?
Well, we basically, you just sort of start talking. Fortunately, usually somebody will call in, and then, of course, it'll go on from there. And then, of course, there's more and more people called in while you have a really fascinating opportunity to bring out ideas, because this is what it's all about. And it's really a matter of teaching. And what's really so gratifying to me, Brian, is that sometimes people will come in and give me a dissertation, and they really have it. They really can understand. They can speak on these things as well as I can. Hang on, we'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Brian Sussman. And how can people get your book? Do you have a website where they can get your information?
You know, Dr. Stan, I do, and it's the website is catchy. It's debatemealgore.com. Debatemealgore.com.
All right. Do you have any sort of a telephone number that people can go to?
No, but I think the website provides a nice email address, which is very simple as well. Debatemealgore@yahoo.com.
Now, how can people get your book? Are they available in the bookstores?
Yeah, you can go to virtually any bookstore and order. Now, I will tell you, a lot of bookstores refuse to carry it, but I think most will order it. Also, the online retailers, Amazon.com, etc. The book is published by WorldNet Daily, and I know, Dr. Monteith, you've had a lot of their wonderful authors on over the years, and so it's just a great privilege and a great honor. And I will also tell you, this smart grid is something that is very frightening. I think I'm the first person to ever write extensively about that, and it's going to lead me to another book, because I do want to talk about the fact that there is an active plan in place, and you know this. You've known this for years, Doctor. There's an active plan for us to have less water, less energy, and less land in terms of private property. And the smart grid plays into this just exquisitely for these people.
And, you know, when you talk to people and you tell them that they want to restrict your access to water, they look at you, you know, how could that be? And yet they really, I mean, we have their publications that are part of Agenda 21 and the Global Biodiversity Assessment. They want to get water consumption down from about 150 gallons a day down to about 10 or 11 gallons a day. And you say, you can't even take a shower with that. That's right, but you don't need so many showers. You don't need to flush the toilet as often. You certainly don't need to water your lawn. And you say, why is it? Well, we're running out of water. We're running out of oil. We're running out of air. We're running out of water. We have to have sustainable development. But they say it often enough, and people begin to say, well, gee, maybe we are running out of water. And it doesn't matter how ridiculous it is, they really believe. So basically, tell us a little bit more about this grid that you're speaking of.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned Agenda 21, and I'm glad that was the central focus of my research, because I've been hearing about Agenda 21 for so many years. When I started digging into the details, I had to include this UN agenda from the Rio Earth Summit into my book. The smart grid really plays off of all of this. Essentially, what you're going to have, well, we have it here in California. We have these smart meters that have been attached to our homes. This is a part of that demand response technology that was mentioned in the 2005 energy bill, and those three words caught my eye, demand response technology. I began doing some research and sharing with friends, and they all thought I was loco. But then in the year 2007, that energy bill actually finally talked about smart meters and even talked about the smart grid. So here's how it works. Smart meter's attached to your home. It's a meter that reads the amount of power that you're using on a minute-by-minute basis. Therefore, they can tier the power schedule so that if you're using power now at 3 in the afternoon during a peak, they can bill you more. But beyond that, it also is something else. It allows someone to read your meter from a remote location and even turn your house's power off from a remote location. Not your neighbors, but I'm talking about your house. Now, the smart meter, and I get into all the details in the book, but it ties into something called the Home Area Network that's being developed by Google and Microsoft, as well as GE. And the Home Area Network will connect to every electrified item in your house, including your new Energy Star appliances. The Energy Star appliances are now being made in such a way that they can, too, be shut off remotely from a central location. So now you have smart meter, the home area network, your smart, your Energy Star appliances, and finally, the smart grid. Now, Obama has said on a few occasions, well, we need to get some new wires up over the country. We need to update our wires. We need to get broadband into the rural areas in the United States. Well, let me tell you what this is all about. This is an opportunity to upgrade those wires with broadband so they will have two-way communication ability. So let me give you an analogy, and this will explain exactly how this is going to go down. It's 110 degrees, and you're using the air conditioner. You've got the house set at 75. You're doing a load of laundry. It's 3 in the afternoon. You're doing a load of laundry. Kids just messed up their clothes. You've got to get those clothes clean before you go to bed early. And then you've also got the big screen TV on. You're watching a ball game. Somebody from a remote location at the power company could say, wait a second, 110 degrees, we've got a power crisis right now. That person has their thermostat at 75. No. Turn it up to 85. They're doing a load of laundry right now. Turn that laundry machine off. Do not let it go back on until 3 a.m. And my gosh, look at that television set. That must be 50 inches. Turn it off right now. They will have the ability to, house by house, do exactly what I just described if the Senate energy bill passes. It's already been paid for with the stimulus. Now all they need is the final capstone of this energy bill to complete their plans. This is Big Brother in your home. This is not liberty. This is something you would expect to see in some other kind of country, not in the United States of America. But ladies and gentlemen, we have arrived. Why? Because there's no plan for alternative energy. There's no plan for more energy, only for you to use less. That's the goal here. They want you to use less, doctor.
And, of course, what really people, I mean, one time I did some studies on the electricity production. I talked to one of the high officials in the state government. He told me how cheap it was to produce electricity. I mean, the cheapest form of electricity is hydroelectric power. So what are we doing? Why, we're beginning to tear down dams all across the country.
Yes.
And actually, in the bill that's coming up here in November, why, for California, why, if this passes, has to do with water preservation. One of the things about water preservation is turning down the tearing down dams in Northern California. So we're going to actually, in the name of saving water, we're going to start tearing down dams. And then they block nuclear power extremely cheap. The only reason it's expensive is because of all the lawsuits filed by the environmentalists. Instead of taking a year or a year and a half to build a nuclear power plant, it takes 10 years. They have to be in court all the time fighting to accomplish that. So they know exactly what they're doing. Certainly if they can stop us from using coal, if they can stop us from using certainly natural gas, if they can stop us from using oil to generate electricity, how will we generate it? Well, it's going to have to be sun and wind, and we'll have a few power plants around that they can turn on during the nighttime when the sun isn't shining and the wind isn't blowing. But we're going to have to drive the cost of electricity up so people won't use electricity. That's what it's really all about. That's what these new smart meters are. Everybody's complaining because the costs are going up. And PG&E says, must be a mistake, you know, why we're not trying to increase the price of electricity. Yes, they are, ladies and gentlemen. They want to raise it so high that you won't be able to utilize it because they really want to lower your living standards. And when you understand that, it all begins to make sense. They really want to raise your living standard to that of the Chinese peasant. And you say, that's madness. And yet, if you read the Earth Charter, that's exactly what they're talking about. Go right ahead.
Well, you're spot on. I mean, let's just go back to what you were saying about the dams. You know, I realize mine is a book about global warming, but I talk about the dams in this book because here in the state of California, they're actually looking at, we've got this wonderful reservoir. For those of you listening from all parts of the earth, we've got this beautiful reservoir called the O'Shaughnessy Dam. It's up in the High Sierra near Yosemite. It's just an engineering marvel, a huge dam. It provides us with water for virtually everybody in the Bay Area. Gets at least a little of their water from this wonderful facility. They want to tear this down. They want to tear it down and then restore the valley that right now is filled with water. And, doctor, there's no way in the world you would ever be able to restore this. The bottom of that thing is so filled with sludge, but they actually think they can do this, and they're willing to spend billions of dollars to do it. And there is no replacement for all of that water. In fact, that water is the main source of water for the city of San Francisco. I don't know where they're going to get the water from, but there's no plan to replace it. And in fact, the environmentalists even loathe desalinization. They don't want that either. So, okay, so the bottom line is they want us to use less. They want energy to cost more. Why? Well, you just described it. Because at the end of the day, they want to force you into having less children. They want to force you into having a smaller house. They want to force us into living in urban environments whereby we can pack together like rats in China or Russia or you name the country so that they can better control us. That's the whole plan here. Now, you're asking, why would they want to do that? Well, right from the very beginning, Dr. Monteith, I talk about Karl Marx as being so much the originator of this environmental thought process and the whole elitist, statist thought process. Karl Marx fashioned himself as a scientist. He really did. And he came up with these laws of matter. And if you break down the laws of matter, they read like this. Some people are randomly spit out of their mother's womb with a better brain than others. Those with the better brain have some sort of right or responsibility to rule over those with a lesser brain, because otherwise, left to their own devices, those with a lesser brain will kill one another and destroy the planet. Hence, a heavy-handed form of government is necessary, hence loads of regulation, etc. This has been the motive behind every communist and socialist government that's come and gone ever since Karl Marx. Well, I've got news for you. That's what they're trying to do here. Barack Obama and crew, so many in Washington, D.C., so many in our state houses, believe the same thing. They think they're smarter than you. And they think left to your own devices, you're going to ruin the planet. that they're going to put together a heavy-handed form of government whereby they can control your lives because they think it's the right thing to do, and they, of course, will be insulated from all of this because they'll be in positions of power as well as have their pockets loaded with dollars in order to allow them to live the lives that they feel they have a right to live because they're smarter and they're better.
And as incredible as it seems, this is really what's going on today. But, Brian, why doesn't the media tell us? Certainly you're in, you know, have a voice there in San Francisco, but you would expect that we'd be reading about this in Newsweek and Time Magazine and U.S. News and World Report. We'd certainly be reading about it, the New York Times and the Washington Post and certainly the San Francisco Chronicle. But, you know, certainly most of these newspapers don't really explain really what this agenda is. I mean, there is a group of people who know exactly what they're doing. They think globally, they act locally, and they are bringing these things to pass, not only at the local, but really through federal legislation. It all works together.
Okay, let's talk about that. I have some stories in my book, ClimateGate, whereby I bring this to light. I'll give you an example, Doctor. This is 1995, I believe. I was working in San Francisco at the CBS station. I was their chief meteorologist. I had left the Monterey Bay, and I'd moved up to San Francisco by that time. You remember me from when I was on TV in the Monterey Bay.
I sure do.
And I moved up to San Francisco. Al Gore was coming to California to have a El Nino conference. Now, El Nino is the warming of the waters off the coast of the western United States and the Pacific. We don't know why this happens, but every 10 years or so, the water's warm, and it creates some interesting climatic changes all around the United States. We're having an El Nino right now, by the way, which is causing for some of the weird weather in the U.S. But he was coming to the state for an El Nino conference. My producer at Channel 5 in San Francisco said, "Brian, listen, Al Gore's coming to town. It's going to be a big El Nino conference down in Santa Barbara. We want you to fly down there and front our coverage for the evening news. And by the way, there's a great tie-in here between El Nino and global warming, and we think that's what Al Gore is going to be talking about this conference." Now, at that moment, I said, "Okay, I'll be more than happy to talk about El Nino again, but there is no way I'm going to combine El Nino and global warming because there isn't a credible scientist on the planet that can definitively say those two things are linked. Well, this escalated into a big argument. And we were, I mean, it got loud. And finally, the argument was ended when my executive producer pulled me aside and whispered in my ear with veins popping out of his neck. He said, "Brian, your problem is you don't know what facts to leave out."
You don't know what facts to leave out. Well, I think that's really what it's all about. And you want to get along sometimes. You've got to just go along with the agenda. And I know people who worked in the media. Fortunately, I do what I do because we pay for our own time on radio. So we have, people that agree with us, that sell us time. And so I'm not answerable to anybody. But boy, when you work for somebody else, especially something like CBS, why, you've got to be a little careful what you say if you want to survive.
Yeah, and so that was just one little story that made me think, okay, what's the big agenda here? What is really going on behind the scenes? I knew my colleagues were liberal, but to tell me I don't know what facts to leave out just seemed really over the top, Orwellian, scary. There was another incident where you'll remember Dan Rather, who was the anchorman for the CBS TV News. I knew Dan because I did a lot of work in New York for the CBS Morning News. I was their fill-in weatherman, and he approached me to become his El Nino correspondent on the West Coast for the CBS Evening News. And I was very excited at the opportunity, and he said, "Brian, we've also heard there's a great tie-in between El Nino and global warming, and you're the perfect guy to talk about it." To which I said, "No, Mr. Rather, I'm not the perfect guy to talk about because most scientists don't believe this." At that moment, it was as if darts came out of his eyes. The conversation ended. He never talked to me about it again. So it was those two incidents, one in 95, that second one in 1997, and I got to thinking, is this really where I want to spend the rest of my life, in this kind of an environment?
Well, I'm glad that you really are doing what you're doing, because I believe talk radio is the last means we have of really reaching people. The internet is great, and certainly there's a lot of great information, but there's a lot of disinformation there. But talk radio, certainly it isn't all good, but at least people can be selective, they can listen, and they can learn who they can trust and who they can't trust. And it's amazing, you know, we have tens of thousands of listeners across the country, and I'm sure you have tens of thousands, if not probably hundreds of thousands of listeners up there in that Bay Area. People, once they trust you and they know that you're not going to compromise your principles, right, you can begin to influence their thought process. And that is what's so important, because we're involved in, well, I think we're really involved in a spiritual battle that is being fought on a cultural, ideological, and certainly a battlefield, and till people understand that there really is a battle going on, and ideas are really, of course, what shape our reality.
Yes, well said. And it is being fought on two different levels altogether. And Dr. Monteith, we owe it to the next generation. I don't want to be an old guy pushing around a walker someday and have my kid look at me and say, Dad, you knew all this stuff, why didn't you say anything? Well, that's why I'm doing what I'm doing. And I know enough about you, Stan Monteith, to know this is one of the reasons why you're doing what you're doing.
Well, I feel it's a privilege to do what I'm doing. I'm just so glad to know that you're up there reaching the people in San Francisco. We don't have a good outlet up there, and too expensive to buy time. But anyway, I am going to ask my... We have three more minutes to, well, talk. And then I will ask you to hang on. I'm going to ask my producer to get your address so we can... I'd like to send you a copy of our book, newsletter. And we'll be back in just a moment with Brian Sussman. Well, Brian, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program here.
Well, Dr. Monteith, let me just say it's an absolute privilege to be on your program, and you're doing a great job. You did a great job as a physician for so many years, and you're doing a great job on the radio now, and you've got a fantastic reputation. This book, Climate Gate, is an easy-to-read book uncovering the global warming scam. There's no question about it. And again, it's comprehensive in that I tell you why these environmentalists are trying to jam these policies down our throat, and then what we stand as Americans to lose should they become successful. And there's a rallying cry at the very end of this book. I want good men and good women to step forward and say, okay, what can I do? I can't sit back any longer. Too much is at stake, ladies and gentlemen. We need to be proactive. And so I'm hoping that with the book Climate Gate, we can get the word out and we can stop, for example, this Senate energy bill, and we can make sure that we turn back to the founding principles of this country, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what it's all about, Dr. Monteith. So I remain hopeful, I remain undaunted. And I'm going to continue fighting the good fight as long as the Lord gives me breath.
Well, I'm so glad that Joseph Farrer published your book. I mean, World Net Daily does an excellent job of getting excellent books out there. And they have a means of distribution. And we're so fortunate now to have, you know, certainly a World Net Daily and News with Views, and certainly a couple of other World Affairs Brief, sources of information that people can really depend upon. And the Internet has given us access to really millions of people across America who never before had any idea what was going on. So I'm really excited. In fact, we are going to carry your book. We'll call them tomorrow, and we're pretty good terms with them, since they do carry our book as well.
Yes, they do.
And we'll go ahead and call Joseph or somebody who works there and get the book, because it sounds like the sort of book that we want to be able to get to our listeners. And I really appreciate so much you taking the time. I know how long and tedious it is to write a book, but it's important that we give people, that we can give them the background, but then we've got to give them the source of documentation they can really depend on. So thank you so much for writing the book. I'm going to turn you over to my producer. He's going to get your address, if you don't mind giving it to him. We'll get you certainly a copy of my book, going into the background of the spiritual aspect of this. And thank you so very much for everything you're doing and for being with us. And I hope we can call on you and get you onto our other networks as well. I want them to hear your message.
I'm looking forward to it, Doctor. Thank you for the absolute honor. Thank you.
God bless. And I've got to just transfer over to Andy here, and hopefully Andy will pick you up and get the address. And so our guest has been Brian Sussman. What a pleasure to have him with us tonight. Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's really fun to have Brian on with us. I've never really talked to him before. I've always felt that I knew him because he was the local weatherman on the television program we watched every evening. And we all felt so, well, sort of a little lost and hurt when he moved up to San Francisco, although it was a wonderful opportunity for him. But now he has a program on KSFO 560 AM. It's here in the Northern California, and you can hear him from 5 to 9, because you can listen to him 5 to 8, and then we come on the air. But we're going to be carrying his book, Climate Gate. We think it's an important book. We'll just have to find out a little bit more detail about it. But it will be available through Radio Liberty very soon. And if I could make a suggestion, this was an excellent program, and we will make this available through Radio Liberty as well. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then we actually have Agenda 21, the master plan. If you haven't seen our sustainable development syllabus, it summarizes the global biodiversity assessment. There are three parts of the master plan. One is Agenda 21. One is the global biodiversity assessment. And the other is the Earth Charter. And the latter two are contained in our sustainable development syllabus. Of course, we don't have the 1,142 pages of the global biodiversity assessment. We just give you all the important parts. And when you read it through, you say, these people are crazy. No, ladies and gentlemen, these people are not crazy. They're diabolical, but they're not crazy. They want to destroy America. They want to destroy America and impoverish our people, and they want an equitable distribution of wealth between nations and to raise your living standards to that of the Mexican or Chinese peasant. And they're going to do this unless you are willing to stand up and become involved. They're going to impoverish the American people. They're going to destroy our currency. They know exactly what they're doing. But behind them are powerful spiritual forces. And until you understand that, very little going on today really makes any sense. So again, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage is radioliberty.com. And if you haven't read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, I certainly hope that you will get that. It's available. It's called The Brotherhood of Darkness. And that is apparently, it's, my wife says it's 9 a.m. 5 to 9 a.m., not p.m. Okay, fine. So that's 5 to 9 a.m. every morning, not in the p.m. And so that you can listen to Brian Sussman in the morning. Excellent source of information. I am just so encouraged to find out he's out there on the front lines of this battle. And we find we have more and more allies all the time. Certainly we work with many of the people we have here, Joyce Riley, Alex Jones, John Leffler, Pastor Butch Paul, and the others. But now we find that Brian's on the front line on a mainline radio station, and there are other people all across the country. Ladies and gentlemen, the other side is worried. This is why they're going to have to move so rapidly to destroy the foundation of this nation. And believe me, they are working at a fantastic rate. That's why they're going to take us into the war. And you've got to be out shouting on the street corners, don't you know that there's no reason to go into this war? Suddenly, don't you know the history, how they create an incident on this whole break between Tel Aviv and Washington, D.C., Netanyahu and Obama is as phony as a $3 bill. That's so when we go to war, they'll say, well, we told those Israelis not to attack Iran. Oh, terrible Israelis, but, well, we just have no alternative. American blood has been shed either here in this country or over there, and we're going to have to shed a lot more American blood because American blood has been shed. Remember the Gulf of Tonkin? It didn't happen. Remember the atrocity stories they told of First World War about cutting off the hands of the little Belgian boys and raping the Belgian women and cutting off their breasts? They were all lies. Do you remember the propaganda stories before we went into the first Gulf War about them? Wicked Iraqi soldiers bayoneting little babies, all lies. And of course, what happened on September 11th was not what you think happened. And what happened at the Oklahoma City bombing was not what you think happened. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. Again, our number, 1-800-544-8927.